The following program is produced by the University of Florida's School of Journalism and Communications under a grant from the National Educational Television and Radio Center in cooperation with the National Association of Educational Broadcasters.
Small countries have an urgent problem of land reform, especially in certain countries like my own, where we have 1.5 million Indians packed in the highlands and who have only about 3 or 4 hectares, perhaps less than that, per head of family, and with the trouble that there are no more lands in the highlands.
Speaking of the peasants, we mustn't forget the aspirations of these millions of them that want to feel that they own something. And land is something which is valuable. Money isn't so important to them. But if they can say, this land is mine, they are a much happier man.
The University of Florida presents The Agrarian Revolution, the second in a weekly series of recorded documentary reports on the contemporary revolution in Latin America. Your reporter is the distinguished American journalist and editor of the Christian Science Monitor, Irwin D. Canham.
The cry of the world's masses for land reform is not new. The slogan, land for the landless, dates back at least 30 centuries. In Roman times, Plutarch tells us how the Gracchi attempted a social reform based on a more equal distribution of land. Similarly, the desire for agrarian reform in Latin America is no recent development. Agrarian reform was the rallying point of the Mexican Revolution. By expropriating and redistributing the land, Mexican economists point out, Mexico was able to achieve economic freedom and social equality for her people. The Mexican Revolution began in 1910. Land reform then has been a goal in Latin America for over a half century. What happens when this yearning for land is thwarted? Cuba is a case in point. In 1950, a prominent sociologist delivered a paper at the University of Florida's first conference on the Caribbean. Summing up, Dr. Lowry Nelson said, "The grand paradox of Cuba is the potential fruitfulness of the land and the poverty of people who work upon it." Yet in 1959, North Americans were astonished when Fidel Castro and his followers brought about a drastic social revolution, now self-described as a socialist revolution in the communist sense. The fact is, the cornerstone of Castro's revolution was land reform. The most dramatic indicator of the need for land reform in Latin America is the high concentration of ownership. Too few people simply own too much of the land.
Venezuela, for example, has a tremendous concentration of land ownership.
A Columbia University sociologist, Clarence Senior, supplies some statistics.
3% of all of the land owners of Venezuela own 90% of the land. In Chile, the situation isn't quite as bad, but it's bad enough. 2% of the land owners own 52% of all of the farmland. And the situation is just about the same in Brazil, where 2% of the people own half of the land of Brazil.
Many Latin Americans, as well as North American observers, believe if there is one step necessary to the continued development of Latin America from a feudal society to a community of industrial powers, that step is successful agrarian reform. At the nub of the agrarian reform problem is the feudal institution known as the hacienda, the large estate or plantation. The system is very close to the one described in the history of medieval Europe. The landowner, the feudal lord, is usually an absentee owner who generally gets his status and prestige from the mere ownership of land. These estates are worked by peasants who, by circumstances, are literally bound to the land. They are born there many times and either cannot or care not to leave. Before the revolution in Bolivia, an advertisement appeared in a prominent newspaper in La Paz. A hacienda, located on the main highway, a short drive from the Bolivian capital, was offered for sale. The hacienda was described as having 500 acres of land, 50 sheep, much water, and 20 peons. We asked Dr. Raymond Crist, the research professor of geography at the University of Florida, to brief us on the historical and geographical background of land tenure in Latin America.
The Spaniards, when they came, found Indo or Indian civilizations that had already evolved their land tenure systems, and those were based around village holdings. The Spaniards themselves, in many cases, swept these aside or superimposed on these groups from in the higher mountain areas between Mexico and northern Argentina, their own manorial or feudal systems of great landed estates. These have, in the course of time, exerted a kind of dead hand influence on the economies of these countries in many instances. Furthermore, in relatively recent times, there has been a development of the plantation economy. In both cases, the systems of the plantation system and the hacienda system have been superimposed or pushed aside the original Indians and their holdings. This has brought about, in so many instances, cases in which the rights of property have been so far extended that millions of people have been without land, without enough to live on, and with the result that, in the course of time, they have demanded what they think is an inalienable right, namely the right to land, which they can cultivate and get the food they want to eat.
Hand in hand with the problem of the ownership of too much land is the ownership of too little land. The urgency for redistribution of land, as well as the method of redistribution, depends on the particular country in Latin America that we're talking about at the time. This is the view of the former ambassador to the United Nations from Guatemala, Jorge Garcia Granados.
For instance, the large countries of South America, even Argentina or Brazil, are not in an urgent need of land reform. They have plenty of land still left that can be occupied by immigrants. What their problem is more a problem of population than land reform. On the other side, small countries have an urgent problem of land reform, especially in certain countries like my own, where we have 1.5 million Indians packed in the highlands, and who have only about 3 or 4 hectares, perhaps less than that, per head of family, and with the trouble that there are no more lands in the highlands, there are no large states, so we have to open up new lands for them wherever we can do it, and especially the difficulty is that we have to give an incentive to the Indians to go to lower lands because they are accustomed to live in the highlands.
So land reform depends upon the country. And it also depends upon the section of a particular country, as well as the particular type of agriculture desired. Cattle raising by necessity uses much larger tracts of land than, say, raising coffee. Colombia does both. And Colombia has been writing a land reform law now before its legislature. When he was Minister of Agriculture, Orlando Falsborda helped to draft recommendations for this law. We put a question to him. How do you go about writing a good land reform law that will cover the various regional differences in land and crop?
Well, the law should include the more general points, should include generalities, and give ample authority to the entity supposed to implement the law to make these regional qualifications or adjustments. And the law now in Congress, in the Colombian Congress, contemplates such an institute and freedom to perform the law.
The problem appears to be not in writing a land reform law, but in getting it passed in the national legislature, where in most cases the landowners also hold the political power.
Professor Emeritus Frank Tannenbaum of Columbia University has written that the hacienda has no built-in device that will allow for reform of the system. He points out that in two countries where the hacienda has been repudiated, Mexico and Bolivia, it was by revolution. Cuba could be added to this list. Professor of Economics at the University of Mississippi, Pedro Teichert, puts it this way.
It's just a problem. It's very difficult because the ruling class has been the landholding class in Latin America. And to bring about land reform would mean to bring about a fundamental change, social change. And the landholding class is not going to give in easily, since that would mean they would lose political power. After all, if you pass tax laws to tax the agricultural people, if they are in the control of the government, they're not going to pass laws to tax themselves. So it is almost required that you have a social upheaval to dislodge the landholding class, take away the political power from them. Then you can have a land reform. But even in a country, even Argentina, with all the power Perón had, he did not touch the landlords.
Florida's junior senator, George Smathers, disagrees with Dr. Teichert. The senator has always had a keen interest in Latin America, has traveled extensively, particularly in the countries of Central America and the Caribbean. Here's what he has to say in response to the view that revolution is necessary to bring about agrarian reform.
I would say that the Fidel Castro revolution and the communist takeover there in Cuba has alerted and aroused and wakened most people of Latin America to the need, that is, the so-called privileged class, who we all agree up to this point have not done enough for their own countries. They have taken a lot out of it and given very little back. I think they are now awakening to the fact that unless they themselves initiate certain governmental reforms, unless they themselves start paying taxes and contributing to the upgrading of their schools, their hospitals, their roads, that then if they do not do something of this character, they're then going to be thrown out and not only lose their lives and their fortunes, but their country as well.
Guatemala's Garcia Granados is another leader who believes in the chances of democratic evolution over the prospects of revolution.
It all depends on the government that is in power. If it is a government, a democratic government that has been elected and that in its program it carries a sound land reform, they can make it without recurring to violent measures.
Senor Garcia explains what he means by a sound land reform law.
I would say that if it is sound, and by that paying a rational price for the property and taxing those properties highly, those properties that are on tilled, there is no social benefit from that land, then the government is in the right of buying that property at its value, at its real value. I mean by that, that land that is not tilled, that is worthless there, cannot have the value of land that is cultivated. So I don't think that there would be any difficulty by a government to carry out such a program.
So far in this program, we have used the terms land reform and agrarian reform interchangeably. Is there a difference in meaning between them? We asked a research sociologist at the University of Florida, T. Lynn Smith, this question.
Yes, I myself very definitely prefer the term agrarian reform because whatever measures or endeavors we make along these lines, we are dealing with the relationship of man to land. And in this relationship, man is the active element and land is the passive element. For this reason, I prefer to refer to it as agrarian reform, to stress the human element, rather than land reform, which stresses the passive element.
Well, under this definition, what is the ultimate objective of agrarian reform?
Well, always when I'm in Latin America, and this now for decades that I have been working in and with Latin American governments, I have always accepted and followed a statement which was made one time by the Brazilian Commission on Agrarian Policy, which indicated the fundamental objective of agrarian reform was the valorization of the ordinary rural man in Brazil, meaning to develop the human qualities of the ordinary citizen, rural citizen, to the maximum. This is the fundamental objective of agrarian reform.
Dr. T. Lynn Smith explains the appeal of the demagogue to the landless masses in Latin America.
The demagogue ordinarily is inclined to point to the fact that there are rich, productive lands, frequently large amounts of them in the hands of a few proprietors, and very large numbers of workers and frequently voters, with little or nothing in the way of landed property which he can use, either saying or insinuating that you, the voter, ought to have a part of this other man's estate. As a matter of fact, a great many people, this is about the only idea they have of the meaning of agrarian reform, is simply to seize the acreages held in large estates and to divide them among the workers.
The appeal of the demagogue who uses this approach is irresistible, seems to be, to the landless masses in Latin America.
Actually, one of the bases of the strength of Fidel Castro in Cuba is the fact that there was a tremendous concentration in a few hands of land ownership in Cuba.
Once again, Clarence Sr.
And Castro has been able to get a tremendous following from the landless peasants of Cuba because he has been distributing land. Now, somebody may say, of course, he's distributing land in such a way that the land workers may not get the land, and I would agree entirely with this criticism. On the other hand, nobody else has helped the Cuban peasants, and this man, madman though he may be, has offered and is delivering land to the peasants.
Castro agents and hundreds of so-called Soviet and Chinese communist technicians have been stepping up efforts to export Castro-style revolutions throughout the rest of Latin America. This threat from Cuba has had the positive effect of helping to wake up a few of the landowners to the urgent need of land reform now. So in Peru, we see Premier Pedro Beltran, a member of one of the 25 families who control most of the land, seeking to convince his fellow landowners that now is the time to act. The alternatives are to begin minor reforms immediately or face the prospect of being wiped out as landowners in a Castro-type revolution. But in general, the landowners in Latin America seem reluctant to act.
The great landowners throughout the country are not frightened of this Castro revolution.
We're in Brasilia now, listening to a Labor Party leader who serves in Brazil's Chamber of Deputies, Oswaldo Lima.
There are some areas in Brazil, as Mato Grosso and Goiás, where scarcely live two people per square mile. But in some part of the countries, as that from which I come, in the state of Pernambuco, I represent here in the House, where the scarce revolution has got a lot of sympathy among the peasants. And there, in Pernambuco, of course, the landowners are sometimes frightened with the propaganda of caste revolution. Because, you know, in that part of country live a third of the national population of Brazil.
Responsible Latin American leaders are worried about what may happen if agrarian reform laws are not passed and put into operation soon. In Bogota, Dr. Orlando Falsborda wondered aloud what might take place if the land reform law, which was then before Congress, failed to pass.
I think it would be a very unfortunate situation because most farmers and most Colombians have high expectations about the passing of this law. It would be a definite outcome that a social revolution could happen, perhaps worse.
On the campus of the University of Florida, the debate goes on over land reform. Which way, evolution or revolution? With students from 18 Latin American countries in attendance, it's not unusual to hear very frank discussions on this subject. We listen in on a bull session with four Latin American students.
Well, the point on the issue now seems to be whether it is convenient to go into a radical, fast land reform in Latin American countries or go at a low rate of speed. How long have we have to wait to see some changes crystallize, and if they're going to be effective as a whole?
It will be effective. All depends the government and the people and the education too.
Well, that's an important point, the education. And you can't educate a man in a period of 6 or 7 months. You can't change his whole way of looking at the earth and try and change his psychological relationship between his relationship to the government and his relationship as a free landowner and his relationship to the landlord.
Yeah, but there is only one way of learning how to play piano, start playing it.
Yeah, you have to do it, but you're...
Yeah, but not a radical way.
You can't do it the radical way, and I think that's proved in Guatemala very, very effectively.
And so the debate continues well on into the night. Evolution or revolution? We've invited Dr. Jose Baquero, professor of economics at the Catholic University of Quito, Ecuador, to outline what he feels to be an intelligent, workable program for Latin America.
In my opinion, the time is ripe to take action regarding a well-planned, well-financed agrarian reform in Latin America. Land must be redistributed not only because people need to find a place of their own, but also because the development of production requires a land distribution to avoid both latifundio, which leaves large plots of land uncultivated, as well as minifundio, also unadvisable, for the reduction of land area to units too small is economically unsound. An agrarian reform must be well planned to cover also irrigation, better agricultural methods, diversified production, etc., and well financed in order to compensate the legitimate price of expropriation, not confiscation, without scaring away either national or international investments, and to give the new owners a good start to make their enterprises a success. Good agrarian reform cannot be made without the wholehearted approval of the great majorities and without good faith and technical know-how.
To conclude our program, we have invited members of the graduate faculty of the University of Florida's School of Inter-American Studies to summarize what we have heard so far, and if they will, try to come to some definite conclusions about the agrarian revolution. The panelists are Dr. Robert W. Bradbury, Professor of Economics, Dr. Raymond E. Crist, Research Professor of Geography, whom we've heard earlier in the program, and A.S. Muller, Professor in the College of Agriculture.
Land reform is needed in Latin America because today we need more agricultural production. And the system of land use in Latin America in the past will not satisfy the need of today, because the hacienda system lived, you might say, for itself. It produced what was needed on that large estate for the people who lived there, but it did not produce food to be used in the cities, which are developing at such a fast rate. And you cannot have large populations in cities unless you have large amounts of food to feed them.
There's one thing that is hopeful in Latin America, and that is that under our point four, we have been giving technical assistance to try to develop a more modern, market-oriented agriculture. This is very important because we know that since 1945, in other words, in the last 15 years, in a good many countries, the population has grown more rapidly than agricultural production. In other words, the agricultural production per capita is less today than it was in 1945. And yet, if we can train these the Latin Americans in better methods of agriculture, evolution may bring about a reform rather than revolution.
One of the important things I can't help thinking in this connection, that one of the important activities that should be carried out all over Latin America is a land survey. There should be a land survey instituted so that people, the country itself, knew how much land, how much national land it had, so that people could figure out how much land the large landlords had. I might say that in many countries this survey has been opposed because the landlords, who themselves have been the government to a large extent, are not interested in having it known how much land they have.
I think one of the reforms that is taking place, but taking place very, very slowly, is an imposition of land taxes. Historically, the land in Latin America has been taxed at a very, very low rate. And this has made it possible to do, as you say, of producing only on one-third or one-quarter of your land holding. The imposition of heavier land taxes would force more of this idle land into productive use.
Precisely. But if those who own the land are the ones in the government, they are not going to get too energetic about imposing taxes on their own property. That's one of the difficulties.
Yes, it is, and that is, of course, one of the hopeful signs of the emergence of a middle class, because yes, when the middle class gets political power, it is apt to bring about this reform in a peaceful manner through taxation, rather than the violent overthrow of the whole system by the lower class, the peasants, demanding a breakup of the largest states.
Yes, and who have nothing to lose, yes, and everything to gain.
And speaking of the peasants, we mustn't forget the aspirations of these millions of them that want to feel that they own something. And land is something which is valuable. Money isn't so important to them. But if they can say, this land is mine, they're a much happier man.
Thank you, gentlemen. For the past half hour, we've been reporting on the agrarian revolution, a part of the contemporary revolution in Latin America.
The Agrarian Revolution is the second in a series of weekly documentary reports on the contemporary revolution in Latin America. The program was narrated by the distinguished American journalist and editor of the Christian Science Monitor, Irwin D. Canham. The series is produced in cooperation with the University of Florida's School of Inter-American Studies. You may receive without cost a printed copy of today's program by writing this station. Today's report was based in part on material published by the University of Florida Press. Today's program was prepared and recorded by Will Lewis for Radio Center, School of Journalism and Communications, University of Florida, Gainesville, under a grant from the National Educational Television and Radio Center, and is being distributed by the National Association of Educational Broadcasters. This is the NAEB Radio Network.